The list of extracurricular activities for kids these days is almost endless. But for many years, opportunities to sing, dance, act, and perform excluded kids with special needs. Combined Efforts Theater changed that. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Combined Efforts Theater gives students and adults with special needs a chance to be creative, test their limits, and perform. This hour, I'll talk with Janet Schlopkel, founder of the theater, and others who've been involved in many productions over the years. Later in the hour, Iowa's film festival season kicks off this month, and there are many more festivals than there used to be. We will get a preview. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowa's film festival season kicks off this month, and there are many more festivals than there used to be. We will get a preview later in the hour. But first, Combined Efforts Theater in Iowa City gives students and adults with special needs a chance to be creative, to test their limits, and to perform on stage. The troupe has been around for 15 years now and has taken on some very challenging work over the years. We're going to talk about this unique theater company. And my first guest today is Janet Schlopkel. She is founder of the theater. Hello, Janet.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thanks for having us.
And I want to go back in time 15 years ago to when you first had the idea for this theater troupe. Where did the idea come from?
At the time at City High School, I was a special education teacher, and I was also at that time the assistant director in the drama department, working with Doug Listina at City High School. And in my classroom, I just could not help but notice how many of my students did things, either little comic routines, or they would come into the classroom singing, the sorts of behaviors that teachers usually try to discourage because you have to be teaching. But I was really struck by the talent and the skill. And Doug was very amenable to the idea of having some of the students participate in the main stage productions. But the way the scripts were created, it was a difficult venture for them to find a niche that worked for them on stage. So I had this idea that maybe I could write something and then the students would be able to participate in it because I could tailor it to the individual talents and strengths. So our first production was an adaptation of The Christmas Carol, and it was at the Little Theater at City High School, which is a really lovely, charming little space. It seats about 110 people. And I remember telling the janitor beforehand, hey, I think we might need a few extra chairs just in case we get people in. He's like, do you really think there are going to be that many people coming? And I said, well, you know, I don't know, but just in case. And within a half an hour, there was a line that snaked all the way down the hall and down the first flight of steps. And the janitor came back looking quite panicked with a big double rack of chairs. And so we packed people in. And I realized then that there was definitely a need and a desire for a program like the one that we ended up establishing.
So what did you see on stage at that first performance that made you think, we need to explore this and do more of this?
Well, I'll answer it in two parts because it wasn't just what I saw on stage. It was what I saw off stage. So what I saw on stage were people having the opportunity to be completely nervous wrecks, go through anxiety, conquer the anxiety, have the support and collaboration of sharing the stage with somebody else, because our program is unique in that we purposefully include and target and go after people with differing challenges, but we also include people who have other challenges in life, and perhaps they're not intellectual or physical challenges. So everybody's holding their own on stage, and it was a very good opportunity for kids in the regular education department to see that sometimes the person who is going to be backing them up or helping them out was somebody in the special education program, somebody that otherwise they would not know had that ability and that skill. And it's a shared The stage and theater in general is such a shared experience. So that's what I saw on stage, and it was wonderful. But what I saw in the audience was the part that still, I think, was the reason I would be devoted to doing this, because I saw parents also experiencing that gut-wrenching anxiety that, is my kid going to go up on their lines? How are they going to look? And I think it's every parent's right to have their child have an opportunity to challenge themselves in a way that you may be frightened about, but then to overcome that and succeed. And I also will say, and or fail, maybe it didn't go as well, but just to have that opportunity that any child can be somebody that you're watching. It always reminds me of the scene in The Music Man. Are you familiar with the music? You have to be. You live in Iowa, right? Anyway, when the kids come out and they're playing their band instruments and the families are just overwhelmed and they're, that's my Davy.
And right. I think, and it doesn't sound that good.
Right. That's the point. Now, I will say for us, we are amazing. And I think that's the other aspect is that people will say, I had no idea. I would never have imagined this was possible because it's a talent that's untapped.
You know, thinking of that scene in The Music Man, and I think about when my daughter, when she was 3 years old, the first time she was on stage, I was overwhelmed by how powerful that experience was for me as a parent to watch her. And I can imagine this audience of parents having that same experience. But I'm also thinking about, you know, a lot of children who grow up with special needs. I can see where there would be a sort of a feeling of wanting to protect them from having the opportunity to fail in a public way and also from the possibility of being so vulnerable, from being ridiculed, that kind of thing. Does that raise the stakes?
Absolutely. I think that's you've hit something that is something that all of us deal with consistently, even when you've been in a program for a long time or you've experienced success. I think that's a fear that never goes away for parents. Is it's only just around the corner that will be the exposure and the vulnerable situation. And of course, it's a legitimate fear because this is something that they encounter in daily life and in new situations with new people. And people look at their children in a different way. And even when they're grown, they're still, every single time you go to a new place, you have that experience again. So to say, I'm going to have you put my child out on stage or, you know, my loved one, and we're going to hold them up for everybody's view. But the brilliance of it is that they're held up for everybody's view when they're able to be laughed at because of the role they're doing, when it's okay to look. Because how many times have you heard somebody say, don't stare, honey, don't look, honey? And you become invisible when people won't look at you. When you're on stage, you're forcing everybody in the audience to take a good long look at what you're capable of doing. And it helps the audience relax. I know audiences often are nervous at first. They don't know what the experience will be and if they're going to be uncomfortable. And as soon as you break that in the first minute or so of the script or of the scene, when they realize, I'm actually laughing at this person and the person's happy about it and it feels okay. Or I'm frightened because of the situation that's going on and that person is making me be frightened and that's okay. Then you start to see the audience's behavior change and they settle back in their seats a little bit and they stop crinkling their programs and looking for mints and it's okay.
So as a special education teacher back then, you knew the students in your class. You knew what they were capable of. You spent time with them. You knew them in a way that most people never get to know someone with special needs. Did you get some pushback when you brought this idea forward and said, no, I think we can really make this work?
I have to say I was extremely fortunate because Douglas Stina, who's still at City High, was absolutely a supporter and a fan and did everything he could to help us get started. And the principal at the time, Mark Hansen, also was extremely positive. And they would come and Doug would help set seats up. He worked as the house manager. He took extra time. So, no, I was lucky in that capacity. But what happened is we quickly outgrew the space. And the little theater can only hold so many people. And it was mostly the stage itself. So then And we also had people like Calvin, who you're going to question here in a little bit, who graduated from high school and still wanted to be involved in the program. And we couldn't say no to them because they were our founding members. And
right.
We loved having them on board and they were good at teaching the younger generation. So then we became a nonprofit, a 501(c) organization so that we could include all ages in the community.
And taking that leap, what did that give you the opportunity to do that you couldn't do before?
Well, there's the possibility of performing in different places where they maybe won't charge you as much because you are a 501(c). It gave us a wider community exposure because of that. We moved to different venues where different audiences saw us perform.
And I know that you have a spring performance coming up very soon, Leap, which will be at the Coralville Center for the Performing Arts. And this is a variety show. So there's music and there's dancing and there's acting. Did you immediately, once you did that first performance, did you think, okay, we need more opportunities. We need different ways for these young people to get engaged and to express themselves.
Right. So I'll back up a step from that and then talk about LEAP again here in a second. But what happened is we had students that came that would do a dance in part of the plays that we did. I wrote plays that also included music. And then we found out we had students that were really good at singing. So we have a men's choir and we also have a dance company. And one thing I would say about our programs that I think is unique to us is that all of our programs are free to participants. And that even includes the costumes. I know that with dance, there's usually a cost for the instructor. And then you also have to pay for the costumes, but our fees are, there aren't any fees for the participants. We do pay our dance instructors and our choir instructor, but the participants don't have a fee. And that has always been very, very important to me, because that's one thing I saw too often is that you don't get to participate in things just because it's too expensive,
right,
or even just because there is an expense, and that's one expense too many. And it's a population that's vulnerable economically also quite often. So I didn't want there to be a division between I can afford this for my child and somebody else equally talented and wanting the opportunity wouldn't have it. So it's a challenge, but we've managed. We are like just at the cusp of hanging on always, but which is why we need to talk about LEAP so that we can sell some tickets to it.
I want to ask you, one of the things that's difficult about theater for a lot of young people who want to get involved is the fact that you try out and you may not get a part. How do you cope with that?
So what we do is we have a policy that if you come to us and you can fit it into your schedule. That's the biggest issue is can you make it to all the rehearsals, because there's a lot of conflicting things. So if you are a person who has a challenge or a disability and you audition for and want to be in one of our shows, we find a part for you or a way for you to be involved. And I would say that not everybody wants that part on stage. There are some people who are really happy to do backstage work as well. But if you want to perform, we find a place for you to perform. That same caveat does not extend to regular education students in that capacity. We have always managed to fit everybody too. But as we've grown, there are a couple times where we could not take every single person, because then we would not be able to take the number of people with special needs.
Now, again, we're going to go to a break here in just a moment, but you do have LEAP coming up at Coralville Center for the Performing Arts, a variety show. That's on February 29th,
right,
at 7:30.
Right, LEAP year. It's on that day. It's on a Monday night. It's at 7:30. And there are people, we have some incredibly talented people performing, and it's all short. You're going to get something you like. You're going to see a belly dancer. You're going to listen to two young women play the ukulele. So there's a lot of things that will happen that evening. Incredible voices, a lot of very talented people.
All right, and we will talk more in just a moment. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk more about Combined Efforts Theater in Iowa City. I know there are other groups around the state that give people with special needs an opportunity to perform and engage musically or in dance. We'd love to hear about your story at 866-780-9100. I'll continue my conversation with Janet Schlopkohl. She's the founder of Combined Efforts Theater. We'll also talk to other people who are involved as well. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Coming up in a few minutes, we will get a preview of Iowa's film festival season, which kicks off this month. But right now, we're talking about a different kind of performance. We're talking about a program called Combined Efforts Theater. It's a theater troupe in the Iowa City area that gives students and adults with special needs an opportunity to perform, a chance to be creative, to test their limits with music, dance, theater, comedy. And with me is Janet Schlopkohl. She is founder of the theater. She founded the theater 15 years ago. And I also want to bring a couple of other people into the conversation. Dr. Chris Okishi is a psychiatrist who practices in North Liberty. He's also very involved in community theater in the Iowa City area, and he has volunteered with Combined Efforts Theater over the years. He'll be serving as MC for the LEAP performance at the Coralville Center for the Performing Arts, which is coming up on February 29th. We were just talking about that a moment ago. Dr. Okishi, thank you for being here today.
Hi there. It's great to be here.
So how did you get involved in Combined Efforts Theater?
Well, primarily through Janet Schlopkohl, in that she invited me to collaborate with her on a musical that was performed by the theater company in collaboration with Iowa City Community Theater just over a year ago.
And tell me about that performance.
Oh, it was really fun. It was a bit of a crazy process. We started it 6 months before the show actually opened. So it was already booked to open, and we started working on the music in the summer before it opened in December. I don't know that we'll work quite that fast in the future, but that said,
no guts, no glory, Chris.
It came together so well. It was really, really a delightful experience.
Well, and tell me, because I think that this is very interesting, tell me about the theme of that musical. Tell me a little bit about it.
So that musical, and I think Janet, of course, can speak more intelligently about it, but I can say what it meant to me. It was very much about some things that I was only peripherally aware of because I was a child during the time that the play takes place. It was during the farm crisis and the post-Vietnam War era in Iowa, as the people were struggling with the ramifications of which family members had gone to the war and which family members had not, and what that had meant. And despite the fact that that sounds like a pretty heavy topic, one of Janet's gifts is presenting things that have social ramifications and serious implications in a way that is entertaining and ultimately enlightening. So it was a warm family musical about major societal change.
All right. And
I could not possibly have said that more intelligently, Chris. Thanks.
Janet, it makes me want to ask you, that's a really deep topic. It's a challenging topic. With the performances that you've done with Combined Efforts Theater, I think that some people would assume that you might keep it a little lighter. But that's not something you've shied away from at all.
No, it isn't at all. And I think we do a lot of historically or time period based plays. And as an evidence that we don't shy away from it, I have a friend who said she was absolutely stunned when she came to one of our performances. It was called San Patricio's. And at the end, the young men were hung. I mean, not literally.
Right.
Doug actually came up with a really brilliant technique, so it was. But it was extremely powerful because you wouldn't expect that on stage you would see somebody have these individuals with disabilities hung at the end of the performance. But that was historically accurate. So, and we have tackled a variety of themes, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire. They're not all dark. Like Chris says, it would be too much for an audience to sit through something that is that difficult. And with the musical, he's referencing Camo, the musical. There were a lot of jokes that had to do with men and women's roles at that time period as well, and hunters and the women who love them. So,
was there a crossroads for you where you thought, you know what, I really want to push the boundaries and see what we can do?
I think from the very beginning we pushed the boundaries. I don't think that there was ever a distinct crossroad. I like stories that are engaging. I think Chris can speak to that too with his experiences in theater, that it going light doesn't necessarily do anything for anyone. So.
Well, yeah, and just to pick up on that a bit, I think the important piece is that it be truthful and that it tells something that is true. And sometimes the truthful stories have some darker elements to it, and sometimes darker stories have some truthful humor to them as well. And I think what makes Janet's work remarkable is that it covers all of the bases of human emotion and experience. I don't think she sets out to say, I'm going to write a dark piece or I'm going to write a light piece. I think she says, here's a story to be told, and we're going to do it in the most truthful way as possible. And that's why it resonates with audiences.
Well, and when I introduced you, I mentioned that you are a psychiatrist. And although that doesn't really play a role in the fact that you're going to be MC at this upcoming performance, I mentioned that because I think that it's very interesting because you are obviously are someone who has worked with people who have special needs in the past. What, from your perspective, from your professional perspective, do you see this kind of opportunity doing for people?
Well, so it's interesting that when you asked me how I first became involved with Combined Efforts, this musical Camo was the first time we were able to directly work together. But I've been aware of Combined Efforts and its programming for years and years, both on a professional basis, but also as a community member. And I think many of us that work in mental health in smaller town areas, the way in which we become aware of each other and the way in which we become aware of the people that we're working with making progress is multiple. multifactorial. We have many ways of crossing paths. So I was able to watch several people over multiple years who had worked with combined efforts make amazing progress. And I think there's newer research. Just last fall, a Vanderbilt study was published that individuals with social communication difficulties, such as autism, with as little as 40 hours of involvement in theater, showed dramatically improved social skills, attentional skills, facial recognition, and also impulsivity improvement skills, just with involvement essentially in one single play.
Why do you think that is?
Well, one of the things that happens in people that have some challenges in understanding social skills is that where people who don't, it sort of comes naturally. For people who have some challenges, they need the opportunity to practice social interaction. So what a good play will do is present a scripted version of reality that you practice again and again. And when you get it right, people applaud. So
it's role playing, but on a grand scale.
It's role playing on a grand scale that, by nature of the process, you do again and again and again and again, trying to get it more truthful and more truthful again and again and again, and then you do it in front of people, and they approve.
Do you think that the pressure to perform also adds an important element to that?
Yeah, and I think this does also for people who have anxiety and who people who have mood disorders and also just have general challenges as far as confidence. The pressure to stand up in front of other people and execute something in a way that is moving to them or makes them laugh or changes them in some way is a transformative experience.
We're talking about Combined Efforts Theater in Iowa City, a theater troupe that gives students and adults with special needs an opportunity to get involved and perform. With me, Janet Schlopkel. She is founder of the theater. Dr. Chris Okishi is here. He'll be the MC for the upcoming Leap performance of Combined Efforts Theater at the Coralville Center for Performing Arts. And before I introduce our next guest, I want to play a little bit of sound from the Combined Efforts Theater Men's Choir. And here it is. Just a little bit of a performance by the Men's Choir of Combined Efforts Theater. And my next guest is part of the Men's Choir, Calvin Goodlax. And he's also a board member now for Combined Efforts Theater and has been involved as a performer and as part of the writing group for a number of years now. Calvin, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
So I know that you got involved around 2009, 2010. What attracted you to this opportunity?
I was at Transition Services Center here in Iowa City, and there was a paper that I wrote in and to be part of it, and that's how I got in to be involved with Combined Efforts Theater.
And what was the first performance you were part of?
It was supposed to be Zombie Hotel, but I got sick. So in the winter time, it was a Kill for Our Times, which was a rendition of A Christmas Carol.
Okay. And after those first couple of experiences, what made you want to come back? Why was it something that you loved?
I really liked the people there that helped with me, and also I made friends with there.
Did you feel like it was – I know that you've been involved in writing and performing. Did you feel like Combined Efforts Theater gave you an opportunity to express yourself in a way that you couldn't get anywhere else?
A little bit. I do like lots of stuff that are pop culture and kind of historical stuff, but I really like to do stuff like that. So you get walls for it.
Yeah. And were you involved in singing at all before you started working?
No.
No.
So I was asked by Janet right here, and I got into the men's choir then.
Exciting. And were you surprised when she said, hey, I think you should sing?
I was kind of trying not to be part of it, but then I decided to join in.
And are you glad that you did?
Yeah.
Well, and I know I mentioned that you're a member of the board now. So you got involved first as a performer. Now you're on the board of the theater. So this has become a pretty big part of your life.
Yeah.
That's exciting. And Janet, I mean, tell me a little bit about the board, because this sounds like another really tremendous opportunity for people to get involved.
Yes, and Calvin is not bragging about himself as he should, because on the board, he always is on top of other groups, what's going on, the calendar, other events, venues. If I ask him where might we perform, he'll email me a list of, I don't know, like 90 places in the state. and just that sort of thing he's always really on top of, and with marketing ideas, publicity ideas. And he just is, I think maybe because of your interest in pop culture or the things like the new radio station that's trying to start, Calvin's always very, he's very community aware. And in ways that I wouldn't be and other board members might not be. So we really, he's kind of a go-to for many of those things.
That's exciting. And you're going to be involved in the Leap performance.
Yeah.
What will you be doing?
I'm going to be part of a sketch and also be part of the men's choir.
And you wrote a sketch.
Yeah, I wrote a sketch too.
What's your sketch that you wrote about?
Two high school students go back in time to meet William Shakespeare.
Well, I'm already intrigued. When you got involved in the theater, you said you were in transition. So how old were you when you started? Back in 2009, were you in high school or were you already out of high school?
I was out of high school then when I got to transition.
Okay.
And then I got to be on the theater group after that.
Okay. And Janet, you talked about, you know, that you expanded the opportunity for people to be involved in the theater beyond high school students because you saw a need in the community for opportunities. And it sounds like Calvin wouldn't have had a chance to be involved if it wasn't for that expansion. But why did you feel like that was important? Not just because you didn't want to let people go, but why else?
It kind of fell out that way. Our board president, Mary Vasey, also, when we started getting board members on, we had people that were older and they knew other people in the community who wanted to be involved. So it wasn't just me. It was also the inclusion of other people. The board grew. They knew people. And so we just couldn't shut the doors on a certain age group or demographic. I did want to mention that I have changed my role, and we have a new artistic director, Michael Pienick, who's a graduate from the University of Iowa. He has a master's degree, lived in New York, performs, is a wonderful performer, vocal performance, and he is now our new artistic director. And I'm taking on something called managing director, which is including more growth of other programs. We're trying to start a puppet troupe, and we're also expanding our writing group, and we hope to secure some funding at some point soon so that we can make keep growing without having to charge our participants.
Well, and you also, you don't have a home theater.
No, we do not.
All right, is that something that you're hoping to find?
So here's an ideal situation. We have a large building that we could rent out to other theater companies. There's quite a few small, very talented little theater companies in town, and it would be great if there was one home for everyone that we could work out a schedule and share. And in the daytime, it would be a coffee shop where they also had artwork on display. It would be staffed by people with special needs and friends, and it would have a place where they could have our visual arts. We have a brand new, just started visual arts component, and I would like to have a place where their artwork could be displayed and people could come in, grab a cup of coffee and a sandwich, and then go to a show that evening. It's sort of like an Uptown Bills slash on a bigger scale.
You're dreaming very big.
Yeah, but it's a community that could certainly, I mean, it's big, but if you look around at how many performances there are going on, all it would take is somebody with a really good schedule, and they, and people could share that space, and it could become a real community theater. I think our company is a very good example of a true community theater in how inclusive we are with other members of the population in this area and around.
Now, I mentioned earlier that I know there are opportunities around the state to get people with special needs involved in performance. We've talked about a program called Dancers with Differences on this program in the past, and there are other opportunities that are growing, although still are not that common. Do you hear from other people who say, hey, I love what you're doing, and we want to do this in our town?
Not that often. I would love for this to be something like a national organization where we could be the support team, or if they asked us, how do we get through, for example, the audition process? What do? How do you include people? Because the audition process is something that in of itself is inherently difficult for a lot of people. So that's not going to get the skill set that you need. So there's from that, and how can I find a script that I can tailor? And we have lots of scripts that we've written specifically for people with different issues. So it would be wonderful if we could see this as a bouncing off point for a national organization and then host a festival in Iowa City where all of the troops could come and perform together on a weekend.
Well, when you make all of this happen, come back. And we will definitely talk about it again. But good luck with your Leap performance. I hope you all have a wonderful time with that.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. That's coming up on February 29th. I was talking with Dr. Chris Okishi, who will be the MC for that performance at the Coralville Center for the Performing Arts. Calvin Goodlaxon is a board member for Combined Efforts Theater and also part of the writing group and the men's choir, part of the Leap performance.
Thank you for letting me be here.
Well, thank you so much for coming. And also thank you, Janet Schlapkohl.
Thanks for having us. And are you going to mention our website?
Oh.
CombinedEfforts.org is our website. If anyone is curious, we take new members year-round.
All right. Janet Schlapkohl, the founder of Combined Efforts Theater. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowa's film festival season kicks off this month, and the calendar is full of festivals around the state. With me now is Liz Gilman, executive producer of Produce Iowa, formerly known as the Iowa Film Office. Hello, Liz.
Hello. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Great. Well, thanks for having me.
Well, and when I say Iowa's film festival season, there are probably some people who think we have one of those.
I know. And that's the purpose. I want people to get away to the big screen and realize all the great festivals out there. Well, I mean, we start tomorrow with up in Sioux Center and we end in November in Muscatine. So there's a lot to choose from.
Is this I know that, of course, a lot of these film festivals are completely homegrown and
exactly.
You know, communities have been trying to make these things happen over the years. Has Produce Iowa been trying to coordinate and make this a bigger thing around the state?
I have. Well, when I started back in 2013, I wanted to start traveling the state to see what all was out there. And I was so pleasantly surprised with these different community festivals that had popped up. And so a couple years ago, I got all the executive directors together from the film festivals and kind of had a little summit and started sharing ideas and talking about what we could do to help them. And the more we talked and got together, the more they were sharing ideas and getting in, and their thoughts were we could really use some help with the whole branding as a statewide network, because they feel that they're not competition, and they feel that the rising tide will, you know, rise all ships or whatever. And so, they really wanted a one voice to direct people to let them know there's great festivals around the state, and they can find listings at produceiowa.com.
All right. And you mentioned in Sioux Center, the Prairie Grass Film Challenge starts tomorrow.
That's tomorrow. Now, that's a little bit different than some of these others. That is a 48-hour film challenge. So various students and people up in the in northwest Iowa and beyond the borders have already done the challenge of writing, producing, shooting, you know, editing everything in 2 days. So what they're going to be doing tomorrow is having a screening of all these and being able to vote and showcase the best of.
So as communities develop their own film festivals, do you help them coordinate to find their own voice? Or is that something that kind of comes naturally? Because obviously not all festivals are the same, and you don't want them all to be
exactly
the same.
Exactly, yeah. And they all have a little bit of a niche, I would say. And, you know, the one next weekend at the Siouxland Film Festival, I'm really proud of this community because before I started, they were doing a one-day At their beautiful Orpheum Theater. I don't know if you've been there, but it's beautiful.
You know, I went to the Orpheum when I was a child with my grandparents before it was completely renovated. And I've seen pictures,
but
I need to go
back.
It's
jaw-dropping. It's just
stunning.
Gorgeous. So they were doing great, and they had one day of their film festival. But once they got together with the Purdue Iowa summits and things and started talking, they expanded to 3 days last year. It was so successful. This year, it's 4 days. And what they like to do is they break it apart where one night might be a documentary night, and then the next night might be a horror night in a whole different venue. Last year, I went up for the international and arts-themed night, and that was at their Sioux City Arts Center. So they've really reached out to different demographics, and they're showcasing more stories. And they're just having a ball. I mean, they really are excited. It's an all-volunteer board that meets up there, and everyone is just very excited with the expansion of everything. So I really can trace that back to our office's help.
Now,
but yet they do the heavy lifting, but we are helping.
With the kind of technology that we have today, of course, filmmakers have some amazing opportunities to get their work out there, not necessarily to get paid for that work, but they can at least get people to see it. In this modern age, what role does a film festival play?
Well, do submissions. And for instance, like with the Julian Dubuque International Film Festival, they are having buyers and distributors that will be at their festival. So if you've submitted, it's going to be viewed by distributors, and you know everyone hopes that their film gets picked up. So there's great opportunities. You never know who will be out there seeing your films. And actually, I was at the Siouxland last year, and some of the filmmakers that were there got together with other filmmakers, and I've told that they kind of struck a deal and they're going to do a joint production on a film coming up. So you never know who you're going to meet when you're there as a filmmaker and who you can kind of collaborate with.
Let's get a preview of another one of the film festivals that's coming up. The Oneota Film Festival is coming up March 4th through 6th in Decorah. And with us now is Christy Ebert-Virtus, who is executive director of the film festival. Hello, Christy.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And the Oneota Film Festival is about 7 years old. Tell me about the concept behind this festival.
Sure. So the festival was created in 2010 by a group of volunteers from the community and also Luther College. And their goal was to produce a nonprofit whose sole purpose was to do the festival each year. And now we've grown from that first season where they had one, similar to Siouxland, where they had one day where they showed primarily environmental films, to a 3-day festival that we're bringing in 65 films this year.
And what are some of the themes of the films, and what are you most excited about this year?
Well, I'm most excited about we have a family film set and a teen film set. One of the things that we're trying to do is focus what we bring into the festival on ideas and things that are happening in our community, and to get as many people in our, well, we like to think of it as like a 150-mile radius as our community that can come to the festival and find something that they really get inspired by. So the teen film set is my thing this year.
Well, and the teen film set is not just about watching films, but there's also a workshop involved. Tell me about that.
That's right. So we are doing, for the first time, a teen documentary film project. So it's sort of three parts. The first part is coming to the film festival and watching two films. The first one is The Mask We Live In, and the second is On Beauty. And then those teens are going to meet with the filmmakers and other filmmakers at the festival and have lunch with them and pick their brains about what they do and how they do it. And then the following weekend, they will participate in a day-long workshop with area mentors who are videographers or filmmakers and learn how to make a documentary film. And then in groups of two and three, go out and actually make a film.
And how did you pick the films that you're including in that?
So I started, when we started thinking about the project, I went to other festivals sort of in the bigger tiers, so Toronto, Hot Docs, and started to look at the kinds of films that they were bringing that would appeal to a teenage audience, and these two films kept coming up. And once I went to their websites and started looking into them a little more, I thought they were perfect.
All right. And The Mask You Live In, you mentioned it focused on masculinity and what it means to be a boy. This sounds like a kind of an innovative idea. We've seen a lot of films that focus on girls and body image and girls as leaders, that kind of thing. But focusing on masculinity and young men, that's something that we haven't seen much of.
No, we haven't. And this film actually comes from the Misrepresentation Project. And they made a film a few years ago on exactly that, on girls and the role that the media plays in girls and body image and self-esteem based on that. And one of the responses that they got over and over and over again was that, you know, we hear about our girls all the time, but what about our boys? So that's where this film came out of. And we sort of feel the same way here.
Now, you mentioned that the teens are going to get an opportunity to interact with the filmmakers. As the film festival circuit has expanded, is it more difficult to get filmmakers to actually come to your festival?
It is, yes. Luckily, we were able to secure three filmmakers from our invited film set. So they will be coming. But for our film set for the teens, unfortunately, those filmmakers couldn't get here in person, but they will be Skyping in. But, yeah, it is getting harder. One of the films we're bringing is actually nominated for an Oscar this year, and the filmmakers were planning to come, and then when they got their schedule from the Academy, they realized they wouldn't be able to make it. So
that's a fairly big deal, I guess.
Right?
Instead of going to Decorah,
but we'll, you know, make an exception for the Oscars.
Well, and Liz, I'd love to get your comments on that, because I know that, you know, film buffs have for many years loved to go to festivals, and some people, you know, obviously people will go out to the Sundance Film Festival or will travel around to their favorite film festivals. With so many festivals, does it become more difficult to get the audience there?
I don't think so, because I think just more communities are picking up on it and offering, you know, opportunities that are closer by. You know, I did go out to the Sundance Film Festival last month, and you know, when I was there, I was like, oh, there's just so many people here and the hassle and everything. And I thought, you know, our film festivals are just as good as this. They really are, because you can get into the screenings. You don't have to stand in a line for an hour to wait to see the film. You know, the bars and restaurants and everything out in Park City are just jam-packed. And so I really actually like the smaller festivals that are around, that you can really interact with people. And, you know, you can have some intelligent discussions with other people that are there and with the filmmakers that are present. And it just makes for a more memorable weekend. It's just a lot of fun, different venues in Iowa to go to. I mean, to go experience, you know, up in Mason City and stay at the Frank Lloyd Wright Hotel and go to their film festival. It's usually sold out. It's a lot of fun. You're interacting and meeting new people. So I think there's just a lot of options. And a lot of the same stories come to our festivals. Like Christy mentioned, you know, she's got an Oscar nominated film coming to Decorah, and that's wonderful. So we're getting some of the same movies here. Of course, yeah, I can understand why the filmmaker might not be coming with that. The Oscars kind of take precedence. But there's just a lot of interesting opportunities closer to home.
So you may not run into as many celebrities as you might.
Well, you
in
never
Park
know.
City.
Gary Busey's going to be up in Dubuque in April. He's coming back. So you never know who you'll run into.
The film culture has been changing a little bit in recent years. And something that we're seeing that's kind of new is a nonprofit film culture growing in Iowa City. There's a nonprofit theater film scene,
yeah.
And the Des Moines Film Society is also starting to grow. What do you see happening with this idea of a nonprofit film culture?
Oh, I think it's great. And I believe the Oneota is nonprofit, and you don't charge admission, right?
That's right.
Christy? Yeah. So I think it's great just to use film to broaden our culture. And I think people are realizing film is important to society. And I think it's great to start discussions and bring communities together. So I think the more the merrier. And it's been fun watching, like you said, the Des Moines Film Society here grow.
Well, and Christy, you're executive director of the film festival this year.
Yeah.
This is your first year doing that.
Yeah.
As you approach that, how much of your time is devoted to this?
Now, 110%. Yeah. As we get closer, it becomes more and more. I'm technically part-time. But I think since about the middle of October, it's been pretty much a full-time job.
And you have a really strong board, Christy. I've gone to some of their meetings.
Yes. Yeah, we have a strong board. They're very engaged and very active, which I'm so thankful for. I don't know how we'd pull it off without them.
Mm-hmm. So is there a network of people who run film festivals that you turn to, Christy, as you're learning the ropes?
No, I wish there probably is, but I don't know any of them yet. Liz is my network.
Christy wasn't on board when we had our first two summits. No. Nancy, the board president, came down for those. So, yeah, we'll have to get you in the loop now that you're on board as staff, Christy.
That would be fantastic.
We have gotten people to come together and share ideas, share your horror stories, tell us what works, what doesn't work, and all learn together.
So, Liz, of course, a lot of people are familiar with the history of the Iowa Film Office and their There have been ups and there have been downs. But since you've rebranded this as Produce Iowa, it's been a few years. What do you consider the role of Produce Iowa to be in the state right now?
Well, to become part of the culture, because the first difference, you know, when the Iowa Film Office folded in 2009, that was part of the Economic Development Department. So this is a whole different thing. Nothing transferred over to me. It was totally clean. And now we're in the Department of Cultural Affairs. And my office is over at the State Historical Museum. So it's a whole different vibe, first of all, with that. And then, you know, my mission is to promote and facilitate media production here. Film is not used in the title. You might have noticed I said media production because television is so huge. You've got Netflix and Amazon and, you know, all kinds of different web series going on that it's not about film. And that was like the big news at Sundance also. They were buying up the films and programming there, and they were opening it up to, you know, episodic television projects and things like that. So it's changing.
Are there a couple projects that are going on in Iowa right now that you're particularly excited about?
Well, there's always something going on. And the caucuses, that brought a lot of excitement in. Showtime was here filming an episode of The Circus. So that's something that was unique. House Hunters is always around. HGTV was doing a pilot show here a few weeks ago. There's just a lot of different things happening.
All right. And as we mentioned at the very start of this, the film festival season is kicking off with the Prairie Grass Film Challenge is in Sioux Center tomorrow.
Yes.
The Siouxland Film Festival coming up next week, February 24th through the 27th in
Wednesday
Sioux City.
Wednesday through Saturday, yeah.
All right. The Oneota Film Festival, March 4th through 6th in Decorah. And Christy, good luck with that. I'm sure as time gets closer, it's going to be 150% of your time.
Yes, thank you.
All right. Good luck. And thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Christy Ebert-Virtus is Executive Director of the Oneota Film Festival. And then we've also got the Cedar Rapids Independent Film Festival coming up in April 1st and 2nd. The Julian Dubuque you mentioned coming up April 21st through the 24th. The Wild Rose Independent Film Festival in May in Des Moines. So if people, you mentioned that the season really is going to run through November. So if people want to find out more, where should they go?
ProduceIowa.com.
All right.
It's also a great way for people to get involved, too, for crew listings and locations and things like that. So while they're on the website, check it out, all the other options.
Liz, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Liz Gilman, executive producer of Produce Iowa. And again, the Iowa Film Festival season is kicking off. Opportunities to see independent films all over the state now through November. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We'd love to hear from you. If you have thoughts on things you've heard on Talk of Iowa, if you have suggestions for things you'd like to hear on Talk of Iowa, please contact us. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at IPRTalk. I am there as well at Charity Nebbe, our producers. Many of them are also on Twitter, so you can look for them as well. And, of course, like us on Facebook, Iowa Public Radio. Horticulture Day tomorrow. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.